Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Dog Works Radio Network here on Blog Talk Radio, and we have a brand new show for you today. It's called The Husky Life, and our host is Stephen LaViolette, calling in from northeastern Canada. Steve, how's it going?
Not too bad. How are you, Robert?
I am well. Welcome to your brand new show. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you are and what you're all about.
Well, not very complicated, actually. I'm just a small-time, ordinary musher. Been a musher my entire life. I took a few years off here and there to explore and to get to know myself and get to know different avenues, but always came back to my dogs at the end of the road, and now I've been full-time and steady with my dogs for the past about 20 years and grew up with them up until I was about 17. And now I live, breathe everything that has to do with my dogs. I also hunt, trap, fish, and just try to feed my family as best as I can.
Well, welcome to the Dog Works Radio family. We've got a whole bunch of shows that talk about dogs, but yours is a little bit different. You know, you've really grown up and lived the life of a musher since you were a youngster, and I think that's going to give a different perspective than what we talk about on mushing radio in particular, where we talk a lot about the sport of mushing, you know, Iditarod, and we interview a lot of Iditarod guests and things like that. But this is going to be about living the life, isn't it?
That's right. I listen to your show quite a bit, and I got to tell you, I get a kick and a ball out of, I guess I kind of look at it as the other side of the coin, as the sport value of dog sledding. There's fantastic mushers out there, like the ones you interviewed for the Iditarod that run the Yukon Quest, even down to small sprint races, that is actually about the sport and the passion of their dogs and running these races, because basically they have full-time jobs and full-time lives that they try to incorporate this piece of nature in there to just beautify and enjoy everything. And then there's the full-time racers that just they give the sport such a good name on how they represent dog sledding. But for myself, it's never been about racing, and which I have nothing against, because I'm very passionate about watching it, and I'm even going to enter a few of them this year. But it's been my life. It's been about working dogs. It's been about caring for the working dog, not so much into doing shows or even caring how fast they go or time limits. I haven't carried a watch on me for the past 15 years. It's just been about going from A to B.
You know, you have a lot of history there at your place in Canada. Tell us about that. We had you on Mushing Radio a few months ago, and I was just fascinated by all the history at your place and with your kennel. Tell us about your grandpa and how in the world you guys got involved in mushing.
Well, it started with my great-grandfather, who back out here, back in those days, there wasn't a lot of population, but there were some lumberjacks that was cutting down the trees and working the land to, I guess, get small towns ready for the Northern Laurentians. And my great-grandfather was one of them. Now, the fortunate lumberjacks were lucky enough to be able to afford their workhorses and have them pull logs and work the lands and so forth. But in my family, I guess, like many, many, many families out there, it became more of what they could afford. And since they had a lot of kids as well back then, my great-grandfather used to just pick up, pardon the expression, but any basic mutt he could find on the road and put them to work with him. And they'd pull the logs and the cut down trees instead of the workhorses and plow the fields with them as well. And then when winter came, since they couldn't afford cars or any other means of travel, and there were no horses for the buggies, my grandfather as well, they just built their own sleds and started carrying the family around in the sleds.
And what year are we talking about when this first got started?
Oh, I can't give you exact dates on my great-grandfather, but it goes all the way back into the 1800s. I know from my father when he was 5 years old that I've got pictures of him riding my grandfather's sled all the way back in 1942. And so you're looking from way back.
way back. You know, that's really way before, you know, the sport of mushing really caught on. Of course, the Iditarod started in the early 70s, and of course the Yukon Quest in the 80s. But there were quite a few races in Alaska in particular, a lot of sprint races when you think about the Lombards and the All-Alaska Sweepstakes and things like that. But without being up here in the extreme north, there wasn't a whole lot of mushing going on in the early part of the 18th or 19th century, was there? At least in America.
Well, no, there was, but it wasn't what we know today. It was mainly for work and travel through the snow. There was also the mail runs. A lot of the mailmen back in history in Canada and the States used to go by with the dog sleds as well because they couldn't make it with anything else. So, but it wasn't a big sport. It was more of a way of life, a way of transportation.
Right. So, Steve, tell us about where you live, where your kennel is located. For folks that are trying to get a mental picture of this, you guys have to check out his Facebook page. It's Tulowak Sled Dogs, T-U-U-L-U-U-W-A-K, Sled Dogs, and you'll see some awesome pictures. You know, I remember seeing later this past winter some of the mountains that you guys were struggling up and down with your team of dogs. It just looked amazing. It looked like the far north here in Alaska, that's for sure.
Well, I like our mountains here. I love them because they're not the Canadian Rockies, so we don't have to climb that much, but they're nice, big, huge hills that we get a lot of beautiful scenes from, and a lot of green, a lot of trees, a lot of green trees out here that just makes it breathtaking. And,
so whereabouts are you in Canada?
Well, if you've ever heard of one of the most touristic towns around here where I am, is called Mount Tremblant. Actually, one of the Iditarod runners, the Yukon Crest runners, Normand Cazavant, is actually from down here. And I'm about, I'd say, maybe 20-minute drive from Mount Tremblant, from where Normand Cazavant used to be located at. And it's, like I said, it's breathtaking country. I mean, and I love to explore. It's one of the main things I do with my dogs. We break trail together all the time. I don't use a snowmobile. I don't use any kind of machinery whatsoever. It's just me and my primal team that go out and cut our trails as we go and explore as much as we can, and then we just let people enjoy them when they come.
So giving people a perspective on the map, where are you in relation to some of the big cities, Toronto, Montreal, things like that, Buffalo possibly here in the States?
I'm about an hour and three quarters north of Montreal, straight line up from Montreal.
And what is the weather like in the winter? Is it extreme cold like we see here in South Central Alaska, extreme at least in terms of my perspective, or is it relatively mild there?
Well, it depends on the days. You know, we've been having some weird winters these past few years, and this year I've hit some temperatures down to minus 40 for a week or two straight, and then the next week I was in my sweatshirt because it was like minus 10, minus 5. So it's gone to one extreme to the other, but I think the coldest I've ever seen it here was a few years ago. It was about minus 50, and it was for about a day to a day and a half. But most of the time, you're looking at minus 20 is the norm, a perfect temperature to be out there where folks don't get too cold and we're good active and it's great for the dogs. But I find for the dogs, the colder it is, the more active they become. So it averages around, I'd say, about minus 20, minus 15 to minus 20 pretty much all winter, but you get a couple of weeks here and there where it jumps to minus 30, minus 40, and then back down to minus 10.
And how are the summers there? Is it pretty mild as well?
Oh, no, it's hot. It's really hot, you know, because the fact that we're in the mountains, I guess, the higher altitude we are, the more summer hits, the hotter it becomes. The more winter hits, the colder it becomes. So we go from one extreme to the other. We really go through the four seasons pretty good. Spring is really muddy and wet. Summer is pretty dry and hot. Fall becomes muddy and wet again, and then winter is good, cold, and a lot of snow.
When you talk about a lot of snow, what are we talking? Are we talking 10, 11 feet, or is it just enough to get the dogs out on the trail?
Oh, no, I'm looking at a good between 6 to 10 feet of snow, easy. I've still have snow in my yard right now. I still have, I've got snow banks that go about 2 feet high. So far, we see a lot of grass, but I still had a lot of snow banks.
So we're talking to Stephen LaViolette today here on the brand new show on Dogworks Radio, The Husky Life. It's going to premiere every month, the first Sunday of the month on Dogworks Radio. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just search for Dogworks Radio, and he's going to have a page on dogworksradio.com where you will find all of the archived shows, not only of The Husky Life, but also all of our family of shows, The Gypsy Musher, The Side Vibe, Team Toby is on there. You know, Steve, we have a whole bunch of shows on our network, and as I mentioned at the top, yours is not only going to talk about the kind of the living the life of Huskies, but you're going to have on several guests as well, and I know we're going to talk about those in just a little while, but what is going to be the focus of this show, Stephen? What direction are we going to go? Just to give our listeners a little bit of a heads up, what are you thinking about talking about?
Well, at first, when you first talked to me about this, I was like, you know what, this is going to be kind of fun. We'll talk about my life and the kind of things I do here with the dogs. But when I come down to it, my life is all about getting to know other mushers as well and other dog breeders and knowing what everybody does. I kind of make my life into like a big tossed salad. I take a little bit of everybody. I mix it up and I try to find my own positions in there according to everything that's going on and be my own kind of musher. But so when you first came to me and talked to me about this, I was really excited, and I was like, you know what, I'll put myself out there. People will get to know what we do here at Tulewak, and sometimes, you know, Facebook can be good, but the written word isn't always the perfect thing to interpret and stuff, and I saw this as a great chance for people to get to know me and my family even better. But then I started thinking a little bit more, and I said, you know what, I've got tons and tons of friends out there who are all sorts of walk of life when it comes to dogs, dog breeding, dog sledding, and so forth. And it'd be great to be able to get their two cents in there and be able to talk and just have like an ordinary conversation around the campfire, sharing a beer or something and talking and just making it, you know, cozy and fun. So I got in touch with quite a few of the people that I regularly speak with, and everybody was on board with it and just overly excited about it. So I'm actually going to bring up some topics that can be sensitive at times, a little controversial at times, but that actually affect everybody in an everyday life. And bringing in these guests to talk about it and get a different perspective at the same time.
You know, what I found, Stephen, as you mentioned, the written word, social media today, it is almost always based on opinion, is what I have found. And, of course, that's going to skew one way or the other, either positive or negative, based on what you say. But a radio show like this, it allows folks to tell a story. And I think a lot of the history of mushing and the history of what we do in our daily lives is that story. And I think a show like this is going to be able to capture that the way that the written word can't, whether it be, like I said, social media or, you know, even in a book or just kind of laid out there for people to read and respond to. People will really be able to hear the story and find the passion in what we're talking about and hopefully take something from it.
I agree with you completely. Interpretation of the written word can be so troublesome at times. You can read what one person writes and you take it one way, and you can read, or another person will read the same thing, take it another way, and you just sometimes just don't quite know what to make of it. But getting everybody's story, getting opinions, getting facts out there is something I look forward to and that I value a lot. I even started this little thing on my Facebook I call it Thought of the Day, and I read quotes or go over what people speak about and so forth and just put my two cents in there. And it's amazing how much people have participated in it now on what they see and what they hear, but sometimes they see or they hear things that they're not quite sure how to interpret it just because they read a certain thing about it. But by getting more opinions and more opinions about it, it just lightens up. And you get, it's all about enlightening yourself to what's around you. So
And for folks that are listening, if they want to be part of this conversation, we can take calls, and we're going to add that number to the Facebook page, and folks can call in and ask questions. We've done that on several of our shows in the past, but typically it's usually just more of an interview format, host and guest, and kind of going back and forth. But we do have that ability to take calls. Steve, are you going to allow that on your show? And if so, are you going to be able to answer those questions from folks that that are just your layperson, just the listener, not necessarily the experts?
Well, I got to be honest, to me, the more the merrier. So, of course, I'm going to encourage anybody to call in at any point in time if they have opinions to share, a story to share, or just want to clarify some stuff. They're more than welcome to call in and talk about it. And as far as answering their questions, you know, like I said, I'm not a pro at a lot of stuff, but I know a lot from what I've learned in life, and I'll do my best to answer as best as I can. And if I don't have the answer, then I'm sure somebody out there would, and they'd be encouraged to call in and maybe put their 2 cents as well.
So, folks, mark your calendars. First Sunday of the month, it will be 9 a.m. Alaska time, 1 p.m. Eastern time, or where Steve is, obviously Eastern time as well, Montreal time, as you say. We cover the time zones here in North America anyway, but this is an international show. You can listen to us just about any time. Stephen, before we get into the upcoming show topics, I would like to go back a little bit and continue talking about what you guys do at your place. And let's start off with talking about your daughter. I know we had your daughter on when you interviewed on Mushing Radio. What a pleasant surprise to have her on. Tell us about her and what she's doing there at the kennel.
Oh, she's got a very big weekend going on. We all do here. We've actually decided to extend the kennel because we are adding to our husky family, let's say. We've adopted a couple more huskies and Siberian huskies, and we're making the kennel a lot bigger. Because one of the joys we have here is to just turn everybody loose and let them run and play and be a nice, strong family. So this weekend, my daughter, Laquatia, has actually invited a couple of her friends to spend the weekend here, and they are working the bush like you wouldn't believe, cutting some dead trees down, raking, clearing, just working a beautiful big section that's about, we're adding about 200 feet by 500 feet to the kennel, and it's all her and her friends that are doing that while I'm setting up the fence all the way around. So she's being really busy at this and working really hard, and it's not the perfect weather either. It's been raining on and off for the past week here, and yesterday we had a lot of rain, and a lot of it this morning, and they were all out there working their behinds off trying to get this done.
You know, that's funny. I'm sitting here chuckling while you say that, Stephen, when you say that she has a big weekend planned. You know, I have a daughter the same age, Nicole. She's 16, and she often says that from about end of September till sometime mid to late March, she doesn't have much of a life. She doesn't go to the movies. She doesn't get to go out on dates with friends because she's mushing. She's working the dogs and doing her things here. Is it pretty much the same over at your place? I think it's a good way to parent. Boy, they can't get in trouble with the boys if they're out there working in the yard.
That's what I love, my friend. I love the fact that she's into dog sledding because that's the biggest attraction I got right there is that she has no time for boys.
That's right. Yeah. They can mess around with the boys in college. That's what I tell Nicole all the time.
Exactly. You know, once you get out of the house and you're on your own, you can mess with them all you want. As long as they don't have to see it, I'm fine.
Tell us about tell us about your daughter. I know that we had her on, and she says that pretty much she runs a team before she goes to school. She goes to school, does her best there, then comes back and runs a team in the afternoon, early evening. Tell us about what she does there at the kennel. What's the day in the life of a teenage musher at your place?
Well, right now, let's say on the off season, it's a little bit different, but it's almost the same schedule. She gets up early in the morning, and when I say early, I'm saying about 5 o'clock in the morning she's up. She's out in the kennel for about an hour where she cleans the overnight poops. She brings out fresh water and soup. She goes to every dog in the kennel She spends time with them, sitting on their houses, petting them, turning them loose, and letting them enjoy themselves in the early morning. And she does all that till about 7 a.m. At 7 a.m., she comes back into the house. She has her breakfast. She gets ready for school, and she hops on the bus for 8, and she's off for school. When she comes home from school, she gets home. She says hi to everybody. It takes her about 15 minutes where she's back out into the kennel again, and she starts the same routine that she did for 2 hours in the morning. And she comes in for supper. She does her homework, and tomorrow's another day. And that's pretty much her schedule. Her weekend is almost the same. She's in the kennel almost all day. She spends the time with her team and with my team. She hooks up a couple of dogs here and there to her mountain bike. She takes off for a couple of runs if it's cool enough. If it's not, it's playtime in the kennel where she entices them and teases them to do some running in the kennel and some playing. And we're actually building some bridges across the trees so that they have different ways of sprinting and jumping in the whole nine yards. And that's pretty much her life. She's in it nonstop. Much like you said, with what your daughter says, the same with mine. When from fall all the way to spring, she doesn't have much time for a social life, which is by her choice. She's into the dogs all the way. When summer comes, then she's out going to the movies here and there, but she invites her friends over. They sleep over, spend their time in the kennel as well.
You know, what I've always told my kids, and we have two boys as well. One of them is 21 and in Colorado. He stayed when we moved up. And then our son Tyler, he worked with us in the kennel for most of his life. I've always said that I'm never going to make them do it. Either they want to do it or they don't. I don't want to push it on them. I've never said, okay, you're going to run this race or you're going to do this or you're going to do that. I've always kind of let them fall into place. And, of course, we've been doing it pretty much their whole lives. How is it at your place? Are you, you know, pretty much pushing her and saying you're going to do this, you're going to do that in terms of racing or extending the life with mushing? Or is it just kind of just a lifestyle?
You know, I'm glad you asked the question because, honestly, sometimes it can be viewed as because mom and dad do something that the kid's forced to do something. But where LaQuaitia is concerned, we've even had our head-butting issues where maybe this wasn't the life for her, and she'd always come back so emotional about how there's nothing that makes her feel like dog sledding. This is so much her choice that even when we approach the racing aspect of the dog sledding, this is something she's bringing to me. I've never been into racing. I've never wanted to race in any way. And if I would even consider racing, it would have to be a very long distance race because I just don't want to hook my dogs up for 4 kilometers, turn around, or for 4 miles, turn around and come back. If I go, we got to go for 3 or 4 days, 5 days. Let's do what we do at home. And she's fought a little in here and there with parts of her identity of about being a teenage girl and the makeups and the boys and the whole nine yards. But when it came down to it, a lot like myself and the generations before me, it was always about the dogs when it came to her. She's just not happy unless she has her kennel. She's not happy unless she gets to be with her dogs. And she sometimes wrestles in how can I get my friends to be involved in what I do because they don't like everything I do. But when it comes to dog sledding, it's just she's got that passion, that glare in her eyes when she walks into the kennel that just stops you from breathing right there.
You know, that's a perfect statement. She has the passion that stops you breathing. What a statement. Yeah. There. Stephen LaViolette today here on the brand new show, The Husky Life on Dogworks Radio. Check us out on dogworksradio.com. Stephen, before we talk about our upcoming shows, tell us about what you do with your dogs in the winter. Are you a tour operator? Do you give rides to guests? Do you have a place where you provide this service? Do they come to your home? What happens in the summer, I guess? What are we looking for, and how do you make money with your dogs if you do?
Well, in the winter, yeah, I do run a tour business. I do give tours. Way back in my younger days, it'd be the little 20-minute, one-hour tours to make as much money as possible. Got got a little bit lost in that aspect of things. It became more important and so forth. But over the years, as the experiences come up, I've noticed that people are more into living the real experience, which is what I was brought up to do and what I do for the past maybe 10, 15 years now. And it's longer tours. I rarely give, let's say, a 5 to 10 kilometer tour. I'll do it on occasion for certain events or for certain reasons. Like I've had a paraplegic come and see me this winter, which was a thrill of a lifetime for them. Nobody wanted to offer them a tour because of insurance policies or lack of. And so that became a little 4-kilometer tour. But besides that, they usually leave for at least minimum half-day runs. And, you know, like I said, the trails are all broken by myself and the dogs, and it's people enjoying nature. We go out into the mountains, into the real nature, and the trails are no wider than the sled itself, and that's what we do during the winter.
Go ahead, Steve. No, I was just going to say, what do the guests think of a sled dog ride? You know, you'll often hear them say, wow, that was the thrill of the lifetime. And, you know, sometimes they get hooked, and the next thing you know, they're packing up the U-Haul and moving north to start their own team of dogs. It doesn't take much, does it? Once you're on the back of a dog sled, it's very quickly to get hooked, isn't it?
It's very addictive. I've told people so often that the minute you buy yourself a couple of Siberian Huskies or any kind of sled dog whatsoever, it's like a drug. You start enjoying winter. You start loving what you do. It's just, you can't stop from being out there. In the past 20 years, I must have initiated at least over 150 people in dog sledding, even if it's just one dog in a kick sled to skidoring to full dog teams all the way out. You know, it's extremely addictive, but you've got to, if you're going to own any kind of working dog whatsoever, you've got to put yourself in that life. You've got to put yourself in there, because the dog's passion becomes your passion at the same time.
And not only is it addictive, but it's also very expensive. And I don't think people really understand just how much time, effort, and money goes into operating a kennel of sled dogs. I know here at our place we have 36 sled dogs. We have 3 full teams. It's a very expensive, time-consuming process. We have a food bill of about $2,000 a month, and people say, whoa, that's more than my house mortgage. But that's our life. That's what we do. Tell us a little bit about that. How much goes into what you do in terms of time and effort or possibly money into your team? Is it a full-time job at your place?
It's a full-time life, Robert. I wouldn't even call it a job. my whole days are concentrated around the life with my dogs and the life that we try to be as natural as possible. When I say I make it a living, I'm in my kennel 12 hours a day, 15 hours a day, and I do everything in my kennel. I build my sleds in my kennel. I do everything in the kennel. Everything that happens is I've got my own spot in the kennel where I'm always in the company of my dogs. They're always with me, and I'm always with them. The expenses, it's about the same as what you just described. You know, the amount of money we spend in our food bills every month. In the past 5 years, we've kind of changed tactics a little bit. We've gone more natural. We grow a garden for the dogs in the summertime, which we freeze everything and mix in and help out in the whole nine yards. And it helps, but again, I mean, we're looking at $1,000 plus a month, and I've got 15, while you've got double what I've got. So everything goes into my dogs, everything. Every penny I make, every thought I have, every instinct is all in my dogs.
And, you know, I wouldn't change it for the world. And when you say it takes up every bit of your life, it's often, including just this past night, 3:15 in the morning, the dogs were barking and carrying on, and I got up out of bed and headed on down to the kennel to see if there is something amiss, whether it be a moose or a fox. But you know, it's truly the lifestyle. It's not the family pet that sleeps at your feet in your bedroom. It's a lifestyle, and it takes a lot of work, doesn't it?
It's like having a 6-month-old baby 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for your entire life. The baby wakes up in the crib in the middle of the night, and you're out there to check out to see what's going on. With the dogs, it's the same thing. You hear a little bark, a little howl, a little something that sounds a little out of place, and you've got your boots on, you're back out there. It doesn't matter what time it is.
That's exactly right. So we're talking to Stephen LaViolette today here on the Husky Life on DogWorks Radio. Stephen, let's get into the upcoming shows. I know you and I talked off air the last few days, and you've got a heck of a list of topics coming up pretty much to round out the rest of the year. I believe you have five shows already scheduled or at least pretty much in the works. Tell us about those. What's happening next month in June and then what's coming up in the near future?
Well, in June, I had this idea because I'm actually delivering a dog box to and a sled to a friend of mine. Her name's Shannon DeBruin. She owns a sled dog / show dog kennel up there, Arctic Sun Kennel, and I'm bringing her a custom-made 2-wax sled dog box and a sled that I built for her. So I'm going to actually be up there with her, and it came to mind, then why not just have her as my first guest to be on the show, which we will be talking about show dogs versus sled dogs when it comes to the husky world, the difference in training, the difference in the body, the difference in opinions that people have. And Shannon actually does is very avid in all the shows, the big shows all across Canada and the States. She's got championship CKC, AKC title holders. And I couldn't see what better guest I could have to talk about this than her. So that's actually what we're going to be hitting in June. In July, we're going to have this really wonderful person. Her name is Terry McHugh. She also owns sled dogs as well. And she's very natural with her dogs, much like we are here. Home remedies, natural remedies, the less chemicals as possible. She's been learning to dehydrate her stuff and get everything pre-canned and pre-jarred for her dogs for the winter season. She's got great secrets when it comes to that stuff. So I was talking to her, and that's going to be our July show. It's going to be about natural remedies and health care for your sled dogs. We've got tons of great shows trying to implement a natural living in today's technological world. I've got another great friend out in Alberta, Marvin Lizette, that's is actually fantastic at this. He found his way living the natural life with today's technology into owning his tour kennel at home, and it's, you know, that's another great show coming for September. I've got tons of great ideas that are going to be going through this, that the summertime with your sled dogs and so forth, racing world, the show world. Yeah, just going to try to implement as much as we can.
And I think it's going to be a fresh perspective coming from a person that's lived this his entire life with a history that goes back to the late 1800s. What a way to tell the story here on the Husky Life. And I think we have come up with an appropriate name for the show, the Husky Life, because figuratively it is the life, is it not? We're doing this day in, day out, and hopefully we can share a little bit of that story with the folks that are listening, at least from my perspective.
Well, I agree with you 100%. It is a husky life, and when you suggested that name, it is just the light went out in my head. It came onto my head, and the husky life, that's exactly what we have. It's 24/7. It's the husky life. It's all about our dogs. It's all about our passion, and I think this is a great way to get it known out there. A lot of people have misconceptions when it comes to how the sled dogs are treated, how they live, how they just see little images here and there. They don't get the full story on it.
You know, you had mentioned that for pretty much your entire life, there wasn't a lot of racing involved with your dogs and at your kennel, but that's going to be something new starting this winter. You're going to try to tackle a few of these races, including your daughter. She's even thinking about doing some long-distance mushing herself and hopefully even the junior Iditarod way over here in Alaska.
That's right, and we actually even just considered that one thanks to your invitation. After our last show, it graciously extended that invitation to my daughter, and we've been like excited about it ever since, and that's what we're planning on. I picked, or we all picked as a family, sat down, went all through all the races and tried to pick what we thought would be best for this season, and we came up with five, which are from mid-distance to long distances for now. Because like I said, for me, I just don't see the point of harnessing up my dogs for 5 to 6 miles. And no offense to anybody, because there's fantastic races out there. There's short sprint races. But for me, I do this every day. I just don't see the point to going to or driving 20 hours to run 5 miles and driving 20 hours back just to do this. So if I'm going to be in it, it's got to be all the way. It's got to be what I'm used to doing. So I'm looking for the long distance races. And again, it's not actually to win them mid to long distance. It's just to actually be there and meet all these people that I've been talking to for so many years and have a chance to get to know them and seeing some new country, seeing some new trails with my dogs. It'd be fantastic. So we're actually going to travel from here all the way up to Yukon to, I think the last race we're going to try to do is the Memorial Mail race, the Percy DeWolf. So we're going to be in different spots.
That's in late March, early April, I believe, is it not?
Yeah, that's right. I think this past season it was on March 27th, I think it started.
So you're going to spend pretty much the most of the winter on the road. I've done that for many years. Thankfully, I moved up here to Alaska, and a lot of our races are within driving distance, and I don't have to spend all that time on the road. Are you guys ready for that? Is that something that you're contemplating about? Boy, we're going to be on the road for a long time.
Well, we talked about it. We're going to try it. I don't know if we're going to do every race for every season. I know we're going to take it one season at a time. And right now we've got three races that aren't too bad. We're looking at maybe a day's time travel, so it's not too, too bad. But the biggest races we want to do that are far away is, for example, the Canadian Challenge. That's all the way in Saskatchewan. It's a three-day drive to get there. The Hudson Bay Quest in Manitoba, that's another one, and the one in the Yukon. So those are, we're looking at about a week and change of travel time there and back for those three races. So those are the furthest ones that we're going to do for this year. The other ones are all, for example, Marmora and Kearney, it's five, six-hour drive from where we are. There's a few out in Quebec that we're going to do as well. They're about a five-hour drive, so it's not too bad. And then the rest of the time, we're still here doing touring and long-distance touring, and to me that's the best way I can train my dogs to do what we do anyway, because they develop so much strength and stamina doing what I do that it's just going to be a treat to do the races.
Can you give us a little perspective on how mushing is looked upon in Canada? You know, here in the States and in Alaska in particular, we're dealing with a lot of feedback from you know, negative type feedback, whether it be neighborhood noise ordinances or you know, people being upset with us for living this lifestyle and raising a brood of dogs in the yard. How is it looked upon in Canada, not only with the public but also the government?
You know, it's getting harder and harder. I think we're kind of like on the same wavelength. It is getting harder and harder. If I look at the government side of things, every town, township, municipality, they put on these laws and these rules that not only for people who own sled dogs or dogs, but also farms, ranches, and so forth, that the rules and the laws are becoming more and more ridiculous. I don't want to offend anyone because I think everybody has a right to live the way they want to live, but it becomes harder to live the way you want to live when everybody else who, I guess, can't appreciate your way of life doesn't agree with it, and because they don't agree with it, their voice becomes louder and rules are made to accommodate them more than yours who've been doing this for decades. Where the government's concerned, for example, right now where I am, it's in Quebec, they've passed a new law that they're adding now, a new license for any people that own a sled dog kennel. If you have 14 or more dogs, you have to buy a new license. If you have more than 50, it's an even more expensive license, a license that never existed before. All of a sudden, it might not be much, but it's just for me and my number of dogs, I'm in the between 14 to 50, which means it's an extra $250 expense a year. That's not counting buying all of the tags for the dogs that I buy from my township. So
right.
It becomes a pretty big expense at the end of the line.
And you know, I wanted to bring this up, and I guess this is sort of our first show topic, Steve, is I wanted to get a perspective from somebody that's been around this his entire life, and as you mentioned, with your great-grandfather in the late 1800s, it seems interesting to me because something that was always there, whether it be mushing or, as you mentioned, farming or livestock, seemed to be pushed out. And I don't know if it's a change in human behavior and the way that, you know, we have to be so close and interconnected with everything, but it appears to me that kind of the farming way of life, whether it be with dogs or people or food, is gradually dissipating in today's world and going so close where everything is so close together and people are so connected. Do you feel the same way yourself?
I agree completely. It's like you can't walk 5 feet anymore without having a neighbor. And even the people who, let's say, for example, if I take our city of Montreal, people are used to living so close together. They hear car horns, sirens, accidents all the time, people yelling at each other and so forth. They get so used to this, and then they come and buy a cottage out in nature, out in the country, but they won't buy one unless there's a neighbor next door.
Right.
They don't feel safe. And it becomes our little country spaces become so populated that everything else gets washed out. Every farm, every ranch, every other place is now, you know, everybody's sticking so close that, I don't know, maybe it's the lack of feeling safe if there's not somebody around them. It's the fear of being alone in nature, whatever you want to call it. But then they do that and they expect complete silence. They hear cows, they freak out. They hear dogs, they freak out. They hear horses, it's too loud. But so the balance is hard to reach here between what's going on. Plus, our population has grown by almost 30 times in the last 50 years. So there's people everywhere. Everywhere you turn, there's people everywhere. And again, it's like they can almost not tolerate the sounds of nature.
Right. You know, I spoke to Iditarod musher Niels Hahn. He lives up in Nome, and I know he really struggled with problems with his neighbors and having issues with sled dogs, and he ended up taking it all the way to the Alaska legislature, and they're passing a resolution or an ordinance or a law or whatever that it may be called the right to mush, having a lifestyle to be a musher.
Yeah.
In Alaska, you know, Alaska pretty much was this was here before the population was the mushing in general was here before everybody kind of made their way up and claimed their space. Is it the same in Canada, or at least in your part of the world? Are people really struggling with that? And if they are, what is your perspective on that? And what do you see as an outcome?
Well, you know, I've actually had to move 5 times in the past, I'd say 7 years, just because of these laws coming into effect and affecting my way of life. And it all comes down to that. It's a fight now to try to keep what was there before. Just like in Alaska and Canada, dog sledding has been part of the Canadian history for hundreds and hundreds of years. It's been there where, like we mentioned before, even the mailman used to pass by with the sled dogs because there was no machines that could go where he could go with the dogs back in the day. And it's sad that such a big part of our Canadian history, and even for the United States, of our American history, that it's being pushed out. And not just the sled dogs, but the farms and the ranches. I know a neighbor farmer here who's having a big issues about having to protect the small stream of water that go by his property because the cows are there. And the township puts in new rules and so forth. It just makes this kind of natural life so much harder to live, and you have to fight, because if you don't, it shuts down for everybody else who even has an inkling of doing it. So, you know, I applaud this person for doing so and taking it up to the legislature. I don't know if I could do it myself. Like I said, I've moved 5 times in 7 years just to find the township that was right to accept the fact that we had a kennel of sled dogs.
Well, besides moving, Stephen, you said you had moved a whole bunch of times. What is the alternative? Obviously, you can keep going north and keep going east or west, but eventually you're going to fall off the face of the map.
That's right, and the alternative is to try and fight these laws if you can. But I think, and again, not to sound too mean or nasty about this, there's so many city people that come and don't know anything about country living, that buy cottages or little parts of land, and they get on to the township councils and they run the small towns like it was a big city, eliminating the lifestyle that we have in the country, because they can't either stand it or don't know anything about it. And as a human trait, most of everybody is afraid of what they don't know. So easier to eliminate. So if you don't fight it, then you're never going to have it. But it becomes harder and harder when the majority of the townships are against that kind of life. So it's like one voice out of 100. And sometimes that one voice is just not enough.
So where do you see it in 20 or 30 years? You know, when our kids grow up and maybe they want to continue on with this life and have a kennel of dogs, where do you see mushing in eastern Canada going, or at least maybe not mushing in general, but the lifestyle? I think mushing will hold out. There will always be those folks that run dogs, whether it be the small kennels in the small. You know, even here in Anchorage, there are many a kennels with three dogs that are running on the sprint tracks down in town, the urban mushing. Where do you see it in 20 years, Stephen? What do you think is going to happen to our sport and our lifestyle?
Well, I think for people like you and me who own medium-sized kennels up to big kennels, I think we're going to be fewer and fewer and fewer. If I look at, there's one township in Quebec right now who's what they've actually done. They actually allow only one big kennel or one dog-setting touring business to be in their area, and they ran a lottery. And whoever won this elective lottery got to keep their dog-setting company in that township. And so I see more and more townships maybe adopting that solution, since there are some of us who still stick to that life and future generations come to it, that maybe that's the direction that they're going to take. You know, when one passes a law, if it's accepted somewhere, it develops a precedence, and then it's easier for any other jurisdictions to adopt that precedence because it's been done. So maybe this is what's going to happen. Maybe not. Maybe people are going to get so caught up in technology today that they'll develop a new appreciation for nature, and maybe that's where our answer will be, by showing and educating people on how beautiful this sport is. Not only the racing part, but the touring part, that when you get out in nature, you find a certain peace that you can't find when you're in the city, and then maybe that'll change. Maybe that'll open some eyes. I know most people I take out on my tours leave here with the biggest smiles you've ever seen, and it's an experience of a lifetime. So maybe if we get more of that and more education to what this life is, people will learn to appreciate it more. It's hard to tell where it's going to go. I think the answer is going to lie in maybe your daughter and mine.
I sure hope so. You know, because mushing here in Alaska, there are so few kids involved, all the way down to the real youngsters. You know, we talk about it on Mushing Radio all the time. There has to be a changing of the guard. If there's not a changing of the guard, if all of these very well-known mushers, the Kings, the Boosers, the Swensons, the Mackies, all of those folks that everybody knows, if there's not somebody on their coattails, the sport of dog sledding is kind of in a real flux, at least in my opinion.
Oh, I agree completely. I think you said it perfectly there. There's got to be a changing of the guards. As far as I'm concerned, I'm trying to teach everything I can, the best I can, to my children so that hopefully if they have a knack for it, if they have the same passion that my daughter has grown to have in this, that they'll take it a step forward. And they'll do even better than what my generation has done and what my father's generation has done. It seems that every generation that falls in love with this and moves on brings a little extra to it. And maybe, you know, we always trust our children to be our future. Well, in my case anyway, I'm trusting that my daughter will take this to the next level, and maybe more people will see her passion because of her age and because of the beauty she brings to this, and it'll just embellish everything.
As you can see, folks, this is going to be a very interesting show with Stephen here. We're not only just going to talk about mushing out there on the trails, enjoying the Iditarod, and you know, hooking up a team of dogs and racing for the prize. This is all about the mushing life, and as we mentioned, kind of the where we perceive the history of the lifestyle is going to go. So I think we're going to cover a lot of these topics here on the Husky Life. As we mentioned, the first Sunday of every month, mark your calendars, 9 a.m. Alaska time, 1 p.m. East Coast time, and of course that will be 11 a.m. on the Central Coast time throughout the Central Standard Time here in the States. Stephen, before we close, we have about 6 minutes or so before the end of the show. I always like to talk about the dogs. I think mushing is more about the dogs than anything else. That's why I do what I do. I do it because I have 36 of my best friends. I'm sitting out here in the yard right now looking down on them, and everything I do is for them. So let's end the show talking a little bit of dogs. You said that you had 15 sled dogs at the moment. Is that right?
15 adults and 3 upcoming puppies, all above 6 months old right now. So 18 in total.
18 in total. Tell us about a couple of these guys, maybe a little bit of their history. Where did they come from, and how old are they, and what have they accomplished? You know, I always like to tell our listeners about a group of dogs I got from my good friend Hugh Neff. One dog in particular, my girl Sydney, she has 7,000 miles on her just on training runs. We haven't really done a lot of races together, but boy, she's got a lot of miles on her, and one of my favorite dogs in the kennel. Tell us a little bit about a couple of yours.
Well, I think the one I always call my brother right now, my dogs, just like you're describing them, it's my family. They're my kids. I always refer to them as my kids, and sometimes I've got to clarify because people think I'm actually talking about my skin kids, my human kids, but they're always my kids. But there's one in particular in my kennel that I always call a brother, and he'll always be a brother. He's just right up there with me. He's been with me for 15 and a half years now at Sumo. He's my main lead dog. He's broken every trail with me. He's been out in every run with me. He's never stayed home if I was gone. And, of course, he's on my third generation dogs from before. And I got him from another musher way back 15 and a half years ago. He was only six months old when I first got him, and he went to lead my sled as soon as he got here. You know, I can't even tell you how many miles he's got on him. In the past maybe 3.5 to 4 years, we've been running an average of, in the winter, I'm not going to count training because training we always start slow in the fall, work our way up. But I train my dogs to do at least 60 miles a day. So we've run in an average between 35 to about 65 to 70 miles a day from fall all the way to the end of winter. Sumo's 16 years old, he turned 16 in January, and he's been on every run I've ever been on. So I can't even begin to tell you how many miles that dog has on him.
Wow.
And I've been trying to retire him for the past 2 years, but he just keeps telling me he's got to keep going. This year, sadly, halfway through the year, he's finally told me that he can't lead the sled anymore. So he's running a team position now, and one of the younger ones is running a lead that he trained as well. So we've got Sumo that's been with me all these years up to my last few entries came from our badass musher, April Cox, and Shannon DeBruin from Arkansas Kennel, who I've purchased from and brought in to bring in some good old-fashioned Siberian Husky sled dogs into my kennel, because that's what I run is Siberian Huskies. And, you know, they vary in age right now from 6 months old all the way to 16. I have my own bloodline in my kennel that date back from my grandfather's dogs. He had one Siberian Husky and his whole pile of mutts that kind of got bred down, and I have a very small part of his line still in there. And I've brought in a couple of other people's dogs over the years, other mushers, let's say, that I've brought in from Andre Pilon Sr. and Andre Pilon Jr. and so forth. And you know, now I'm mixing in the Arkansans and April's dogs into mine. And it's you know, know, there's so much story that we need another 3 hours for me to tell you about all my dogs.
Well, you know, that's what it's all about, you know, and we live with them every day, all the way from puppyhood, all the way, as you mentioned, all the way up to 16 years old. I know at least here in our kennel, we have just a couple of minutes left, Stephen. Everybody has their favorites, whether it be mine or my daughter's. What is your daughter's team like? What does she have on her team? Does she have some that she gravitates to herself, or, you know, does she have her own dogs? What's the deal with that?
She has her own dogs. She has one dog that she's raised from birth that came from my grandfather's line. Her name is Kira, and she has a dog that we got from a good musher, racer, and sled dog owner, Caroline Marin. She's got another dog that she bought herself with the money she saved from another good musher, Abby Fallis from North Runner Kennels. And now she's got, as you well know, Carter from your kennel that came down here. That's all part of my daughter's team. She's up to 6 dogs, and they're all female. She loves to run with the girls. She calls them her girls, and we're getting 2 more for her to finish her team of 8 so she can run the mid-distance races this year. She's very attached to every one of them. She's grown to love every one of them. She's made them her best friends. She wakes up in the morning. She has full conversations with these girls as if they were her friends in high school. You can see her sitting on the house just telling about her day and so forth. And so, yeah, maybe the one that's been with her the longest right now is the one that was born with her about 4 years ago now. And I think maybe that's the one she's attached to the most, kind of like me with Sumo. But that's mainly because of time, not really because lack of personality in the dog.
Very cool. Stephen, just a minute or two left. What's happening next month? And can folks follow you on Facebook? And if so, how?
Well, they can always follow me, like you said before, Tuluwak Sled Dogs on Facebook. Send me a friend request. I'll be more than happy to meet and greet you. Next month, we'll be talking with Shannon DeBruin. We'll be talking about show dogs versus sled dogs, the good and bad. We're also going to be talking about backyard breeders and purebred registered breeders. That's going to be our topic for next month with Shannon DeBruin as our guest from Arctic Sun Kennel.
And that will be, I'm looking at my calendar right now. What day of the month? Do you have it handy there, Stephen?
Well, I have the 1st of June is the first Sunday of the month, or it would fall on the 8th, which would be the first week. So you're the one that would have to tell me.
when are you going to be in town there with Shannon? What day of the month there?
I'll be there on the 6th.
Okay, on the 6th. So our next show will be on Sunday, June 8th. Is that okay with you, Steve?
That's perfect.
All right, folks. So there you go. Mark your calendars, 9 a.m. Alaska time, 1 p.m. Eastern time, Montreal time, where Stephen is. And I guess Shannon will be Mountain time, which will be 10 a.m. local time, her time. So therefore, June 8th will be the next episode of The Husky Life. Make sure you follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just search for Dog Works Radio in the search box, and you will pull up all of our conversation back and forth. We always put the shows upcoming there. And, of course, dogworksradio.com is our main site. You can listen to all of our episodes, to all of our shows there. Stephen, as always, it's been a pleasure. We'll talk to you next time, okay?
Thanks a lot, Robert. Have a good one.
Thank you. Stephen LaViolette, The Husky Life, right here on Dog Works Radio. And I promise, guys, I will make sure that his name is right from this point forward. Stephen LaViolette, Tuluwak Sled Dogs is the name of the kennel there in eastern Canada. Steve, we'll talk real soon. We'll see you next time.
All right. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.